One of the reasons I wanted to interview you guys was because your story is a little bit different to many. With interest rates so high, tenants' rights getting more and more regulated, with tenant eviction bans on the horizon, it is becoming more and more difficult to become a landlord.
Doing a standard buy to let nowadays just doesn't cut it.
Is the standards have become so low. The average age to buy a house is 37. I'm sorry, that is a joke. If you become too much of a saver, inflation
will rob you of it.
The government are literally taking properties off of people if you structure it in the wrong way. Pink Floyd bought a mansion on the beach in England and he bought it through a company. He forgot to file his company accounts and therefore his company got struck off. Who owns the property now? The government. And in this video, you're going to be learning the ins and outs of how to become a successful property investor and landlord. I'm going to be talking to Ryan and Claire, who've both been landlords for over a decade, and how they're pivoting with the times to make their property landlordism an actual profitable business. And at the moment, you guys are making, what, a couple of thousand?
Couple of grand a month, so passive. If interest rates hadn't have rose the way they did, would we have found yourself, or would we have carried on doing what we were doing?
You'd have been comfortable.
And when you're comfortable, you don't change.
A lot of people are renting rooms at the moment, and their accommodation is worse than prison. So what are some of the misconceptions then about property investors? Ryan and Claire, great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Samuel.
I want to talk to you guys because you're property investors. You're making like, you know, a decent income from your property portfolio, rejiggling things around.
Yep.
And you've got a different approach to a lot of people because a lot of people want to just build as big of a business as they can, make as much money as they can. But for you, it's more about what?
Lifestyle and time, having free time.
Yeah.
Is quite important to us. Like I say, we worked extremely hard. We've been together since 16. Like I said before, we were saving and saving to buy a deposit, save up. And so we now want to, we obviously want the passive income, but we also want a bit of free time.
Yeah.
So we don't want to build a business on us having to be there permanently or, you know, mega involved. We'd rather build something that's a bit more passive.
Yeah.
You know, once you've done the initial, say, HMO or even SA, once you've done the initial setting up, it's, you can pretty much do it remotely from sort of your phone or, you know, have sort of cleaners set up and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that's more what we're sort of focusing on.
So not massive income, but a passive income.
Yeah.
And at the moment, you guys are making, what, a couple of thousand?
Couple of grand a month so. Passive.
Yeah. And that's from properties that you own?
That is, and that's on a standard buy-to-let at the moment.
Which you're now changing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's going to increase.
Yeah.
So what are some of the misconceptions then about property investors?
Greedy landlords.
I mean, things have changed, obviously, with interest rates. Doing a standard buy-to-let nowadays just doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
You know, you can almost sort of be in the negative per month.
Easy, you can. Even the fact that you guys are still making money with high interest rates and everything that's happened. And you've got a very small portfolio, but the fact that you're still making money is tough to do that. You need good deals.
Then that's what
more people are struggling
caught up on.
Yeah, definitely.
It has to be the right deal. It has to be the right house for us, certainly. So it has to generally be within our area. It has to be a good price. Generally a good condition, because within where we live, you can say, for argument's sake, the house is worth 400,000 in a bit of a wreck that needs, say, 70, 80,000 spending on it. They're still trying to get sort of 350, and they will get 350. Because people move into it on the, it'd be my forever home.
Yeah.
And they do it up over time. Or they watch the likes of sort of Homes Under the Hammer and say, you know, we can do a kitchen for £1,000 and we can do this and do that. Well, in realistic times, you can't. You know, sort of tradies are all gone up and expensive. And it costs a lot more to do that. So you end up sort of bargaining against those people. So it can be quite challenging.
Mm.
Although I feel like, for the first time that I've sort of seen in my lifetime, I suppose, that houses are starting to drop. We're getting a notification sort of weekly that things are coming down.
A lot of things are being reduced at the moment.
They are, or they're sitting on the shelf sort of slightly longer than what they normally would, because usually they're snapped up.
Especially
quick,
in our area, they really go really quick.
But yeah, it's just difficult.
Well,
times.
As house prices drop, and rents go up.
Yes.
And interest rates drop.
Yes.
It's going to make
a big difference.
Yeah. It will make a big difference. Yeah. And it will mean that yields are higher.
Yeah.
But then as that happens, as yields then get nice and attractive, then suddenly everyone starts buying again. That's suddenly house prices go up and then rents maybe stagnant for a little bit and now yields drop and then people stop. And that's what we see with this constant cycle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much will it affect your income when you do change, when your tenants come to an end? What are you expecting? Because you've got one.
More than double.
Right.
At the moment, like you say, it's roughly, I think it's just literally under £2,000 a month. We expect it to be about five or six.
Yeah. So it'll more than double.
And that's conservatively as well.
Yeah. What are some of the checks that you've had to have done then to turn? I mean, one of them you're turning into a HMO, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not in an Article 4 area.
No.
We've looked at that already. The other one we want to turn into an SA. It's in a good location. We've always said it from the start, haven't we? We're like, actually, especially coming since we've done your course. It's a 2-minute
walk to the town and a 2-minute walk to the station.
Yeah.
30-minute train to London on like the fast track.
How many rooms will it have?
So it's only 2-bedroom.
That's a 2-bedroom.
How many rooms?
HMO would be a 4.
A 4?
Yeah.
So you're going to turn it from a 2-bed house into a 4-bed HMO?
A 3-bed house at the
moment. The HMO is a 3-bed.
Okay, yeah. So you're going to 3-bed and you're going to turn it into a 4-bed HMO. Mm. Presumably by turning one of the rooms into a bedroom.
Yep.
Won't need a license.
No.
No.
Won't need planning. You basically won't need anything.
That's it.
So it's almost as simple as just
put a wall up.
Yeah. Okay. Put a wall up, put beds in it.
Pretty much.
And you're gonna double the revenue on the property or double the profit.
Yeah,
on the property.
And it's at that stage now that it could do with a little bit of a light TLC. Refurb.
We've owned it for pretty much 11 years and we did it. We did a BRR without even knowing we did a BRR.
Okay.
We sort of brought it, done it up, and we didn't refinance it until the 10 years.
Long time.
It was a long time.
We didn't realise.
We wasn't aware. And also,
do you own that in your personal name?
We do.
Yeah.
We
do.
Which isn't necessarily that bad, though, because when you refinance it, here's an interesting thing many people don't know. Mm. If you own a house in your because I have a lot of houses in my personal name and I'm not moving them over to a company.
No. Yeah, we feel like that.
If I've got a house in my personal name and the house goes up from 300 to 400,000, 500,000, I see it going up, capital appreciation, I can refinance it and I can literally live on that capital growth if I want.
That's our end plan. So
just live off the capital growth.
Absolutely. And it's tax-free.
It's totally tax-free. Whereas if you do it through a company, it's not. Because if you do it through a company, you refinance it. The money goes into the company tax-free.
Yeah.
But then if you want to take it out as an income, now you've got to pay income tax.
Yeah.
You're getting hit. And then suddenly 100 grand becomes 70 grand.
That's it.
Yeah. So I think there's advantages.
There's 2 and 4 for both.
Interest rates tend to be a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Moving forward, we would like to buy them into a company just so we can offset the monthly figures. Obviously, have like business costs and stuff like that.
Another thing, did you hear the story about Pink Floyd?
No.
Oh, guys, that was a mad one. This is recent.
Yeah.
So Pink Floyd, I'm sure you know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. He bought a mansion on the beach in England. Can't remember where it was now. £10 million mansion. Mm. And he bought it through a company because he probably watched one of these finance guru videos. Yeah. Own it, buy everything in a company, right? So he bought it in a company. But this mansion, because he's rich, he wasn't paying attention to it. And he was just sitting there. He might stay in it a bit, rent it out a bit, Airbnb, whatever. But the problem was he forgot to file his company accounts. And therefore, his company got struck off.
Oh.
Because if you don't file your company accounts, you'll get a compulsory strike off. Your company becomes dissolved. Yeah. So where does that leave the property? Who owns the property now? The company owner? No.
No.
Do you know who?
Bank.
The government.
Government,
Wow. Yeah. See, that's the things that we like to learn that we can avoid because it's very easy to have
that's
stuff taken away.
That's what we've got as well, I think, with our journey, is we'd got to the point where we needed like contracts and things like that just to know what we were doing.
Yeah.
And that more information.
Just to be covered.
It was you, wasn't it, that said, I've been looking at Samuel Leeds. And I was like, oh, okay. And you started showing me some YouTube videos and what have you. And I can't remember when you said something. And I did a quick Google search sort of thing. And I said, oh, it's got a crash course tomorrow.
Literally, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, 11 o'clock at night.
There's one tomorrow in London.
The day.
And it was like, well, let's, you know, let's go and have let's a little go. Look. I didn't know much about yourself at all. No. Like I said to you at the dinner, I'd only stumbled across you because of Andrew Tate and sort of watched a couple of your videos and I thought, oh, you know, this seems sort of fitting for us. Mm. And then we went along to the crash course and, like I say, by sort of 11 o'clock, there we were signed up as, well, me first, as a full Academy member. And even then, I didn't understand what I'd actually signed up for, but it just felt right within me. And yeah, as sort of things had progressed, I was a bit like, oh, had I sort of made the right decision? And then me and Claire had the conversation that we need to do this together. We've done everything together. Mm. So if I'm going off and doing X, Y, and Z, and you're sort of staying at home looking after the kids, I feel like it wouldn't work and it would test our relationship.
Yeah.
I think we need to do it as one. I mean, we work well together. I'm the talker and Claire does the background and all the paperwork side of things to make sure we've sort of crossed all the T's and dotted the I's. And so we do work well together.
Yeah. I think we just felt that if you'd have gone off and done the Academy, I'd have carried on life. And I think our paths would just sort of
drifted apart.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want that.
What we've done now is we've done it together and it's actually
made us stronger
as well. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, we were talking about this the other day, weren't we?
It's definitely helped.
It's definitely
something.
And it's brought my confidence up a lot more. I remember one of the first times on the Academy when you went into the other room and it's like, right, you've got to sit in a circle and you've got to pitch yourself for 5 minutes. I was like, Ryan, do not leave me.
Do not leave me. And just as she said that, I remember
Ricky
saying,
if you're sat next to somebody,
like your spouse or your friend, move.
Yeah. I was like, do not. And
right now, they're probably grabbing you
off. Absolutely. Going, do not move. I was like, yeah, but I think it'd be better because, you know, we can network differently.
Stay where you are.
And I obviously knew that I couldn't go anywhere. Yeah. So I was like, okay, fine.
But come the second training program, You knew what to expect. It's fine. Go.
So it was a lot better.
But yeah, we believe in getting people out of their comfort zone. Yeah. And also people have been, because you guys have been landlords for years, it can become lonely. Yeah. And also it can become boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can run out of setting new goals. And
that's where we've got to.
Gives you a new lease of life.
Yeah.
Re-looking at your portfolio, restructuring it, hopefully helping you double or triple the income from it.
That's it.
Now I know you've got other deals. You've got, you're just telling me you've got a deal.
Rent to rent on the way. And we're also got a viewing for a house on Saturday.
Cool. Looking for your next BRR now.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. And until we see it, there's a few options. There's a bit of land to the side that, hopefully we could build a house next door maybe and then probably sell the pair.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can extend it and make it to a big HMO, which would be tricky because it is an Article 4 area. Whereas if we turn it into, like we said earlier, a four-bed HMO, it doesn't fall under the regulations.
Yeah.
And, that's probably what we'd look to do.
You'd speak to initially. Charlie, see if you can get assisted living.
That's it.
Yeah.
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 But we did speak to Charlie earlier, but he said it was only in sort of Essex.
That he deals with.
Yeah. And we have spoke to our councils as well.
Yeah.
Previously, but it was sort of fell on deaf ears.
Mate, it's difficult with the council. They're so stretched and... Yeah. So many different departments.
And also they just want to give you the national average. You know, when you sort of go online and it's, oh, we can give you...
Yeah, give me the national average per room.
Yeah.
Then it can work really well.
Yeah, true.
LHA rates per... That's the thing with housing associations and council. They say, we'll give you the average. You go, okay. Yeah. The average for a three-bed house might be 800 quid. Yeah. But this isn't a three-bed house. It's a four-bed HMO. Mm. And the average... per room for a shared room is 400 quid and there's four rooms.
That's right.
So that's 1600.
Yeah.
So just the way you frame it, you can double the rent.
Yeah.
What do you think your message will be to landlords then that have maybe got a couple properties, been in the game for a long time, maybe a bit stagnant, bit unsure about the market, interest rates, not making a ton of money and just wondering whether to sell their properties or whether to really learn and educate themselves like what you've done? Like what are you thinking?
I would say for the average buy to let, it doesn't make sense at the moment. So, but also I wouldn't advise just watching a couple of YouTube videos and thinking I can do this on my own, because there is a lot more to it than that. Like with the Academy, you learn everything about everything. And then also you've got the networking side of it as well. You've got the mentors. You know, there's always the backup and support that you would need, because nothing's plain sailing. You always sort of find bumps in the road. So I would say invest in yourself, whether it's yourself or other sort of avenues, just to really focus those skills, and then you can make it great, really. You can certainly
I guess
maximize.
It's about treating like a business, isn't it?
And yeah.
100%. So we treat it as a little retirement nest egg.
Yeah.
You know, it was just...
something that's plodding along in the background, you know. We go to work every day, you work hard.
That's
you're
it.
You're doing all right.
Yeah.
But really, there's so much more out there.
There really
that's
is.
That's what we've learned.
Yeah.
When you treat something like a business, you get business results.
You do.
Yeah, and your feelings change as well because,
you
know, we found our own tenants ourselves. We got the property staged and everything, got them on Right Move. And we treated it, I wanted to know who I was having in there, and I went for the person I thought was most suitable. But then I've picked them myself, and it's you need to sort of like take that relationship away and treat it more like
a business.
They're just tenants at the end of the day, unfortunately, but they are. And if you get too involved with them, you're going to make personal problems.
Rule number one, never, ever make friends with your tenants.
No.
I remember there was a guy called Boaz.
Yeah, I moved
remember
in. Saying
this. Oh, if I told you this story before. Yeah. I moved Boaz into one of my houses. I was only about 19, 20 at the time.
Yeah.
And he was cool, man. We got along just fine. Mm. I liked Boaz. And he used to send me his music because he was an artist. He used to send me his music and I'd listen to it. And I'd almost consider him like a loose friend.
Yeah.
And at the time I thought, oh, this is great. This is fantastic. Isn't it great when you can be friends with your tenants? And it was all wonderful until Boaz stopped paying his rent.
Yeah.
And then when Boaz stopped, and you know why Boaz stopped paying his rent? I think because he saw me as a friend.
Yeah.
And when you see your landlord or your boss or whoever as a friend, it changes the dynamic of the relationship in a very negative way. Boaz stopped paying his rent. And then when I'd message Boaz, why aren't you paying your rent? He was matey with me. Oh, sorry, mate. The thing is, this has happened and that's happened. And now it's awkward.
Yeah.
And now for me to suddenly go all professional and evict him,
it's
very awkward, very difficult. You're adding extra pressure on yourself by becoming friends.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be friends with your staff.
No.
If you're their boss, you shouldn't be friends with them, and you shouldn't be friends with your tenants.
Yeah.
Because then they'll take liberties, give an inch, take a mile, keep it professional. You can be friendly, but not friends.
Yeah.
We have learned that.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I started many businesses throughout my life. I found out very early on I couldn't work for somebody. So I've always started my own thing. And every time that I've started a new company, I've learned from the last company. So I've structured it in a different way, i.e. like now I do plumbing and heating. So I've called it Gasman Hearts as opposed to Ryan Seabees Plumbing. So it sort of takes you away from that as such. And like, you know, plumbing is normally 24-hour call out. I've never ever done 24-hour call out. I'm not interested in it, don't want to do it. So it's about learning from your previous mistakes and then putting that forward into what you're going to do going forward. So with that in mind, I think that's delayed our sort of training from yourselves. We've now been on the academy for a year. And we've gone through the process, we feel like we're not moving fast enough, and you sort of see people around you and they're doing this, doing that. And you almost then sort of rush into a mistake because you are generally rushing. Whereas we've sort of said, right, let's sit back, see what goes on. Let's learn as much as we can. And we've done other avenues, i.e. like trying to put in HMO licensing. So we've learned the process of that. We're also looking at buying a one-bed flat and turning it into a two-bed.
Yeah.
So we learned the process of that, how to like look through head leases, how to speak to the leaseholder, ask for the permission. We had that. And then we were actually looking at buying the leasehold as well. So
The freehold.
So we've learned a hell of a lot without actually really doing a lot.
Well, it's like when you go to university. You know, if you go to university, and you learn all the different avenues, but the difference is with university is you're actually learning things that are directly applicable to your business.
Yeah.
And the way I see it is being a property professional, being a property investor, it's like a toolbox.
You're
going to learn all the different tools. You know,
absolutely. I can wholeheartedly agree with that because, I mean, I have a horse and there's a natural horsemanship of things. And he describes the same. It's a tool in your toolbox.
Mm.
And you need to know which tool to pull out at what at what point.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get an animal to do something, it's not always about you will do it this way. It's about slowly teaching them the right way. And actually, they're a mate. They can do amazing things.
And when you learn about how to extend a, you know, negotiate with the freeholder and extend the lease and how it works and how to do it, then you might come across a property and go, oh, it's got a short lease. Yeah. Most people go, oh, it's got a short lease, it's no good. Sure. But you go, actually, this is an opportunity.
Yeah.
If you might, you might learn about how to evict a tenant properly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, right now I don't need to do it, but I got it in my toolbox. Yeah. So when I do need to do it, now I'm ready. If you're playing cards.
It gives you confidence as well.
It does.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing.
And we learn by doing it. I mean, you can sit here and tell us until we're blue in the face. Until we actually do the process, we don't learn. And I do think doing it is the best way of learning. I mean, everyone's going to make mistakes in whatever you do in life. But it's about sort of minimizing that, because if you make too many mistakes early on, it can put you off. It sort of make you run away, fight or flight sort of modes. So yeah, I do think the academy has been fantastic for us. It's really been a proper learning journey.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to interview you guys was because your story is a little bit different to many, because you were already landlords. And you saw the academy more of like a training, networking, sharpen your toolbox. And I wanted to sort of talk to landlords that are making decent money, but at the same time, a lot of people are like young and they're 19 and they and they were homeless. You know, you guys have come from good jobs, good backgrounds. So it's just a different perspective, really. How's your confidence growing? Then why has that happened, Claire?
I think because I've been mum now for 10 years. So I've got into that routine, you know, I've just been mum, stayed at home with the children because it was what we wanted to do. And I've not really been out there as such. And all of a sudden I'm like, right now I'm around a lot of people, you know, talking, putting myself forward, doing something for myself as well. And I think I'd lost that sort of, it's almost given me a purpose again as well, which has been really nice, like coming to the dinners and actually telling people who you are, not just mum, pick up this or mum, pick up that, you know, and running around after the kids and things like that. I think it's actually given me a purpose and it's made me feel a bit more like, I'm back out there sort of thing, you know.
What's the community like? Because we get accused of being cult-like. That's one. Cult-like?
No.
You have to think about it for a second.
Well, it depends on you as the individual. And we learned this. If you sort of hide away in the corner, then people aren't necessarily going to come up to you. If you, I'm not saying, you know, run around and sort of shake everyone's hand, but just be open. Open with your body language as well. Yeah. And then people will approach you.
It takes time to do that, though. It's like Claire said, first time round, she was clinging on to you.
That's it.
It can take, especially if you're not used to it. People get social anxiety. Now, when I say cult-like, I mean, I think people see from the outside all these people making all this money, doing deals, high-fiving each other. And it's like, what the heck is this? But actually, it's really, people are happy because they're just making money.
Absolutely. Yeah,
the energy is just something else. I remember going on the crash course, and I think I said to you at the dinner, actually, we went to, you're walking in and straight away, your guys, they high-five you. It makes you feel
welcome. Gives you that
It gives you up, makes you feel welcome, you feel uplifted. And I just think it's we always leave the training saying we're in that buzz.
We don't really even tell them to do that or anything.
No.
That's just what it's almost just the culture.
It just feels
I might have said it one time, like, oh, when they come in, let's high five them. But now
it just happens.
It's not like everyone's told. But even the delegates, you know, they'll be high-fiving each other. And and also you might talk to a stranger as if they're like a mate almost.
Yes. It's very,
very
strange.
Quickly. It's amazing how fast you can build a relationship. Like even at the ACPP. At my hotel. By the end of the 2 days, you do feel like you've got lifelong friendships.
Absolutely. Yeah, you
it
feel
was
like
a small
everybody.
Little family.
Yeah.
You know, we actually started a group afterwards, sort of accountability group, because a lot of people also struggle with accountability. And I think we majorly fell into that category. We had no one to sort of answer to.
Yes.
So you then get lapsed and relaxed. So, you know, putting yourself into that environment, and you know when you're seeing them every week or every month.
And you've got someone to answer
and
to.
And they're going
to
say, Did you go and view that property, or did you follow that up? You feel like you have got someone to answer to, but you also want to do it for yourself, because otherwise you turn up every week or every month and you, well, no, I'm still trying. You know, it hurts you inside. It makes you do it.
So I would say that. People get upset with me sometimes on Instagram and stuff. Like I did a post, and it was a little bit deliberately tongue-in-cheek, but I did a post where I said, if you don't own 3 houses by the age of 25, you're doing something disastrously wrong. And if you're not a millionaire by the age of 30, you're... I can't remember exactly what the wording was, but it upset a lot of people. But the thing is, I do think that when you... It's like a wake-up call. And it's like... And if people are offended, but think 3 houses by the age of 25, and they might think, that's not even possible. But then think, well, is it? Yeah. Maybe it is possible. Why did Samuel say that? Yeah. Maybe I need to raise the standards. Yeah. What's happened in this country is the standards have become so low. The average age to buy a house is 37.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The average age to get a job for a woman in the UK is 24.
Wow.
And for a man is 23. So people aren't getting jobs until they're in their mid-20s.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that is a joke.
It is.
So you're not getting a job.
Yeah.
So...
Well, that's why everything's been delayed. But also, we don't have time anymore. We barely speak to our neighbours because you're rushing out to go to work, you know, or you just don't have the time that we used to. I mean, during, say, lockdown, everybody spoke to everybody. Everybody was nice. Everybody had the free time that they not used to.
It was quite
to.
Nice, actually.
It actually was. It brought out the best in people.
It was not nice if you're living in an apartment.
No.
It was a sin that it happened.
Absolutely. Mm. Yes, but I do agree.
But the flip side.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. I'm in a mansion with a swimming pool. And
absolutely.
For me, it was... And I ignored some of the rules. If I'd have followed the rules to the tip...
If I'm honest, so did we. We didn't actually change anything.
And I mean, if they want to arrest me for that, then they can arrest Boris Johnson and everybody first.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's... Yeah. Yeah. And
the people that followed... The law-abiding people that followed the letter to the T and lived in apartments and didn't get to go to their mom's funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting.
It affected them mentally.
Yeah.
And I'm still seeing the aftermath of that. Because, you're basically being thrown into prison. As good as a prison within your own home.
Yeah. And if you're, and some of the, this is another thing, a lot of people are renting rooms at the moment and their accommodation is worse than prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even just in London, but like you can rent a room in London. A rabbit run room, illegally.
Yeah.
Below 70 square feet.
Yeah.
No wardrobe or anything.
No.
Single little bed or mattress on the floor. Mm. And you can pay £500-600 a month.
Yeah.
Like what? It's
disgusting.
Yeah.
We're on a salary of £1,500-1,600.
Yeah.
And by the time you've eaten and whatnot. Right.
You've got nothing left.
You've got nothing left.
And that's why people can't afford to buy houses, because there's... Once you've gone to work, you paid your bills, you paid your rent, your food and all the rest of it, your car, you've literally left with 20 quid.
I remember when I first got my first HMO that I bought, the rooms were terrible. Mm. And I was disgusted at how it had previously ran. Mm. And I took pictures.
Yeah.
This was my first HMO that I bought. So I bought it as a HMO and converted it to HMO. I think I might have been about 19.
Yeah.
And I took pictures of how bad it was. And then when I started training, when I was like 26, 27, like 10 years later, I showed the pictures and I said to everybody when I was 26, I said, look how bad this room was. And everyone gasped in the audience, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Recently, I did a presentation in London and I said, oh, look at the first, and I showed the same picture.
Yeah.
And no one thought anything. They were like, looks all right.
Wow.
Doesn't look too bad. Yeah. Because the standard of living over the last 16 years since I started in property has dropped. The culture has dropped. Mm-hmm. Now, when I started out, when I used to say to people, prospective tenants, I'll meet you at 7 o'clock next Tuesday, guess what? They'd be there.
Yeah.
Now you have to confirm every 15 minutes prior. Because now if someone makes an appointment, chances are they won't honour their word.
That's right. Yeah,
because we've got loose lips, lax commitments, lazy, standard of living has dropped, conformity.
Yes.
As because now we're in university till we're 23, 24. Before, people used to have jobs when they're 16. I was working at 16.
I started work before 15.
Right. And that was normal.
Yeah, it was.
So now you have to legally stay in school till you're 18. And then most people go on and go to college, uni.
Yeah.
So by the time they do get a job, they're so brainwashed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they've been trained now for almost a quarter of a century
to
do as you're told. That's put true. Your hand up when you want to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Don't answer back.
Yeah.
And do memorize information. Do yeah. work on your own.
That's right. Yeah. Don't ask for help.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just such.
Don't cheat. Because yeah, if you ask for, cheat, if yeah. you ask for help, and if you try and do yep. things as a group mm. effort mm. collectively, yeah. if you say, "Oh, do you know the answer to this? Do you know the answer to this?" and you shit, that's cheating. No. Do your own work.
Yeah.
Everything is the opposite of business. In I business, agree. It's all about working together as a
yeah.
group.
Yeah.
If you don't know the answer, ask for help. Mm-hmm. Think outside the box. Yeah. Don't conform.
No.
No.
Yeah. It's completely different. Yeah. And then we wonder why people are so messed up.
That's right.
Yeah.
yeah.
So we try and teach our son. At the moment, we are.
Do you homeschool?
No.
No, we'd love to, but
we're not in this position.
We're not in a position to at the moment. We How old we are really kids? Would. So he's 10. Our son is 10, our daughter's 7.
Yeah. yeah.
So I'd done a literally a couple of nights ago. I've got out £1,000 from your drawer. And I counted it out and I sort of put it down as like £600 is you work for me. And I said, as a barber, just as an example. So I said, there's your £600 for your month, you know. So I did £600. And I said, are you happy? He's like, yeah. To a 10-year-old, £600 is a lot of money, mm. right? So I said, right, tax man needs to take his cut. So I took out 140. I said, right, that's now your tax paid. Are you happy? Yeah. Yeah. He was still happy. Now you've got to pay your rent. So I took out another 150. I said, are you happy now? Yeah. Yeah. He generally seemed quite happy. Yeah, still got a handful of money. What's, you know, now you've got to pay your gas and your electric. Took out £20 each. Right. And he was like, well, we don't pay bills. I said, we do, Theo. Right. Because he doesn't see it. So yeah. I said, you come home from a hard day's work. Would you like it to be warm in your house? Well, yeah. I said, well, that's your gas bill. Would you like to be able to turn the light on or the TV on? Well, yeah, that's what your electric's for. So, and then I did, so then I divided it up into 4 weeks because that was a month. So, right, that's 1 week, that's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I think he had 80 pounds,
yeah.
right? And I said, are you happy now? And you could see him drop and not really, but yeah, I suppose.
You told him you got to work right. Wednesday to Sunday.
Wednesday to Sunday at a barber shop. So you get Monday, Tuesday off. Is that all right? Well, yeah. I said, okay, Theo, we're going off road on Saturday. Would you like to come? Oh, yeah, you've got to go to work, haven't you? And then the penny finally dropped. I said, also, with your money, you can't afford to come off roading. I said, so what are you going to do? Are you going to work the Monday and the Tuesday as well so that you can afford off roading? But you still can't because you're working a Saturday. And that's the cycle that people get stuck in.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's very easy to get into and extremely difficult to get out of. I mean, we were both into that trap early on. And like I say, I just thought, I don't want this forever. I need to change. I need to change now.
We worked hard, didn't we, from early on?
We did.
To save, because we knew we wanted. We've been together we from knew what very we wanted. Early on.
We wanted to save for a house, and then we were keen because we then rented that out. We were getting money in, and we was like, right, we'll do another one, and then another one. And, you know, we were stuck in that mundane cycle. And to be honest with you, if interest rates hadn't have rose the way they did, would we have found yourself, or would we have carried on doing what we were doing?
You'd have been comfortable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And when you're comfortable, you don't change. So sometimes a shake up in the system makes you do things.
True entrepreneurs are made in tough times.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when times are turbulent and there's problems, that's when most millionaires are created.
Yeah.
Because it forces you to have to think.
To change. Yeah. It's, yeah. And we're all, I suppose, even if you have a job, you feel comfortable. Although most people, they'd struggle to live past a month if they lost their job. And that was another thing for us, wasn't it? We are savers. We wanted to say, right, we've got a year's worth of money sitting there in case the worst happens. You know, we know that, you know, if, say, for argument's sake, I break a leg, we still pay the bills.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to be taken away from us. And it changed me, certainly, as a person with that safety net. So it just made you look differently at life. It sort of got me out of that rat run.
I think the two things that I kind of said to you and the two things from this that are big takeaways are really important is, number one, they're printing so much money.
Yeah.
If you become too much of a saver and you're saving money in the bank, the inflation...
Will rob you of it.
Will rob you of it.
Yeah.
And that's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is, if you're saving and investing, you're going to have to constantly be working.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
if you can do what you guys have done and are doing more now, mm-hmm. which is save maybe.
Yeah.
But then when you invest, buy something where you can increase the value.
That's right.
And then pull the money out and recycle your savings mm-hmm. to build your portfolio rather than save, buy a house. Now I've got to go and save for another 10 years because saving up for a deposit on a house, it's funny because the academy is 12 grand. People used to say, because I started the academy, it was like 2017.
Yeah.
People used to say, why would you join the academy and pay 12 grand when you could just use that as a deposit to buy a house?
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's fine. That's an opinion.
Yeah.
But my answer, of course, would be, well, you might be able to buy one house, but if you did the academy, you're going to learn to buy multiple houses and you can use other people's money. But it's fine. You know, everyone's got to make their own decisions.
Of course.
Yeah.
However, now, 8 years later,
yeah,
the academy ain't changed. It's still 12 grand.
Yeah.
You can't buy a house with 12 grand. You can't.
You should probably buy a shed.
I mean, that 12 grand's not even going to cover your stamp duty on an average house.
No, it's not. It's really not.
No.
The house that we're looking at on Saturday, stamp duty is 15 grand.
I think it's something about that. Yeah.
So there we go. If you learn one thing on the academy, if you just learn how to save stamp duty.
Yeah.
Bang.
That's paid for it.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
It's and that's why I think one of the reasons why now people, I know I still get my skeptics, it's fine, but now it's such an obvious decision.
Yeah.
If you're actually, and it's tax deductible.
Well, yeah, it's no brainer. well, we actually just signed up for another 2 years.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
You know, so it was obviously a clear choice for us. Otherwise, we wouldn't have made that decision.
Yeah.
Because we know going forward, that money is going to be nothing compared to what it's going to earn you or save you, like what you just said.
Yeah.
And it is so true. I mean, £12,000, if you haven't got it, is a lot of money.
It is.
I totally get that.
It is. It's not for everyone. We don't think everyone should do the academy. Everyone should do the crash course.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It gives
and
you
everyone should do a course, something, even if it's like $1,000 or $2,000 or just get.
Yeah,
get a strategy, start making some money.
Which just makes you think differently.
100%.
And that's sometimes the kickstart that people need.
The academy is only for people that are very serious about saying, you know what, I want to do this as a serious business. I'm going into property. Yeah. If you're, you know, and obviously it's a lot of money. You need to be able to afford it. And some people might finance it through loans or whatever. But we'll do our best to interview people and to make sure that we think they're a good fit. But ultimately, everyone's an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been accused in the past. It's like, oh, you should never have sold to that person. But it's like, well, if they took a loan, if the bank gave them the money.
Well, it's no different, is it?
And if you go into any car dealership or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They'll sign you up for.
Of course. If someone comes to me and says, look, I want to do one of your courses. Oh, I want to do a course. Here's the money. Mm. It's not my job to interview them we'll try our best.
Yeah, of course. And you are there. It's like what we were saying earlier. You know, you are at the end of the phone. You know, you've got all the technical backup and the mentors and stuff. And if you find yourself, let's say, falling behind or under pressure, then just speak out.
We do. And our customers are very, very happy. Most of the people that talk negatively have never done any of our training at all. But like, I'll give you an example.
There's They've never invested in themselves.
There was a guy who messaged me. I won't say his name, but he said this. I'm booked onto the crash course. Will I be able to get a refund if I don't enjoy the program? Okay. And I said, a refund for what? And he said, the crash course. And I said, but it's a pound. So I'm just thinking like, what?
Yeah.
And obviously the pound is an admin processing fee.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And then he said, that's a lot of money to some people.
What? No, he's being
I think
silly.
He might be trolling me at this point.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
So I responded and said, it might not be a good time for you to get into the property business as you will need a bit of money behind you. Contracts, company set up, probably about 2 grand. And then he said, so there's a risk. And I said, there's always a risk to every investment you make. Honestly, mate, I think you should just focus on your job at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, if you're so... Yeah. I don't know if he's trolling me or not. He probably is trolling me. It's fine.
It sounds like it.
Probably is.
Over a pound.
But the thing is, like, he might not be, because there are some people that genuinely...
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They do live on the breadline. I've seen it.
Or they'll say, oh, I need to get contracts.
Yeah.
oh, Samuel, you told me I could get a house with no money down. Yeah, you can't. You don't have to pay a deposit, but you're still going to have to pay. You still have to get a lawyer.
Yeah.
If you can't afford £1,000 or £2,000, you're still going to need petrol money.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or bus fare. To even go see the viewings. Absolutely.
It's like if you're literally on a knife edge and you've got nothing and you are, then maybe.
It would, it's maybe, not for you.
Maybe, no, maybe it's not. Yeah, maybe you're not meant to be. Or maybe you are, but maybe not yet.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to just focus on your job for a bit.
Yeah.
Put away £1,000 at least.
Yeah. Well, they could use it for something to aim for. Yeah. If that's what they want to do, they've seen your course and they think, okay, this is what I want to do. I think
though it's a mentality because I've been so skint. Mm. Like I remember, you've probably heard the stories, but I remember like even as like a late teenager, even when I owned properties, I was so skint driving around a Ford KA, £450 car. The only reason I had a car at all was because I had to get to viewings. Yeah. And I remember that petrol gauge going down and I'm thinking, I can't top it up. I don't have any money. My credit cards are maxed out. Everything's maxed out. Car breaks down because of no petrol. Push it to a petrol station. Yeah. Put in the minimum spend, £5, just enough to get home. I have to put a fiver in. Put a fiver in. Go in. Embarrassed. I've pushed the car to the petrol station and put a fiver in. Obviously, I'm broke. Yeah. Embarrassed. Yeah. Lady's nice to me. Mm-hmm. Tap my card. Declined of insufficient funds. Haven't got a fiver.
Yeah.
Take out all my different cards. Mm-hmm. All of them are overdrawn. Yeah. All of them maxed out. Mm-hmm. I literally haven't got a fiver. Have to call my little sister and ask her, can you transfer me a fiver? I'll pay you back next week. I just need to get home. Yeah. Like that. But even when I was that skint, I was still going to viewings.
Yeah.
I was still out there. I still had a suit.
Yeah. You could have sat home and whinged about how life ain't fair.
Yeah. I'd still go networking. Yeah. I'd still travel from Wolverhampton to go to London to go to a conference because I knew I needed to be there. Like, my mentality, if someone had said to me, oh, I've got a business opportunity, I wouldn't have been like, I can't go there because I can't afford the bus fare. Like, my mentality was not broke. No. My bank was broke, but my mentality was rich. When I talk about broke people, I'm not talking about their bank balance.
No, you're talking about their mindset.
I am. Yeah. If I say you're broke and you deserve to be broke, I don't mean you have no money, you deserve no money. I mean your mindset is broke and that's why you deserve no money.
Yeah. Because like you say, they're stuck in the system.
Yeah.
Really. And it is designed in such a way that is to keep you in that position.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I know financial advisors, not financial advisors, sorry, employers, I've got friends who are very wealthy, lots of staff, deliberately give their staff bad financial advice because they want them to waste their money and be broke just so that they depend on the job.
Yeah.
I know, I've even almost done it myself. As an employer, everyone knows, they wouldn't say it, but in the rich club, if you have lots of staff, everyone knows, get your staff to buy cars they can't afford. Get them to take holidays they don't need. Get them to buy a holiday now, pay for it next year, because then they won't be able to quit their job because they need to pay for that holiday next year that the suntan's already gone. So now they're dependent and now they're a slave. And if that's what employers do, think more when you've got the elites.
When we were watching your banking crisis and you said that the country went from 7 million or billion into 20 trillion.
Yeah.
I said to Claire, I paused it. I said, right, who lent them that money? Well, I don't know. I said, well, it was, say, the UN. Right. I said, see, you've got England here. You've got Germany here. Right. Now they're going to war. They need to borrow money. Right. So they haven't got that money. So they're now getting themselves into debt. As you said, it went from a manageable debt to an uncontrollable debt. So really, whoever lent them people money also lent that side the money. They didn't care who won because they won. Because once you're in debt with that person, well, you're now owned by that person, very much like a job. So it's, you know, with say a war, it wasn't the first sort of thing you see. It was more what was going on behind the scenes. That was the way I see it.
And interesting about debt though, if you owe the bank 10 grand, then you could say they own you.
Yeah.
If you owe the bank a billion, You're not their slave.
No. They then work for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's, and again, to get your head around things like that, because to the normal person, that wouldn't make sense.
No.
It just wouldn't. And once you sort of realise the philosophy behind that, you think, I understand. I know what you mean, you know. And obviously, you've got to get to that position first to sort of kind of understand it or even see that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. Life isn't as straightforward as people sort of think. It's just not. Yeah. Things are set out in a way to enslave you, basically. And I say it to my friends and they look at me like I'm crazy. I say, we are modern day slaves. You know, we go to work, we come home, we have dinner, we go to bed, the next day we go to work. We don't do anything that we want to do or spend quality time with our friends and family purely because we don't have that time and we don't have the money. You know, people look forward to a holiday once or twice a year and that is the highlight of their life, or buying a new car every 4 years because they've got nothing else in life to look forward to.
But the thing that you guys have really understood, which is huge, is you don't need loads of money.
You don't.
You just need
enough
and a passive
bit. Yeah.
To be able to live a really good That's life. Right. And when you're making, I mean, you guys, you know, I mean, I know right now it's a couple, but it's going to go up to 4 or 5.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference. So Ryan, Claire, thank you for coming on and sharing.
No worries.
Looking forward to continuing our journey together.